Chapter 7. First Night. Now You Know Jack. A Simple Woodcutter. Therapy. My Father's Visit. Linparza. Mr. Bowditch Makes a Promise. 1. I asked Mr. Bowditch if it was okay to sit in his chair, and he said, of course. I offered him half of my sandwich and was kind of relieved when he said no. Jersey Mike's subs are the best.
I might try a cup of soup after pillow clock. Chicken noodle. We'll see.
I asked if he wanted to watch the news. He shook his head.
Put it on if you want, but I rarely bother. The names change, but the bullshit never does.
I'm amazed it works. Don't the tubes blow out?
Of course. Just as the C cells in a flashlight wear out or the 9-volt in a transistor radio.
I didn't know what a transistor radio was, but didn't say so.
Then you put in new ones?
Where do you get the tubes?
I buy from a company called Retrofit in New Jersey. But they become more expensive each year as the supply diminishes.
Well, you can afford them, I guess. He sighed.
The gold, you mean? You're curious. Of course you are. Anyone would be. Have you told anyone? Your father? Perhaps a trusted teacher at school?
I can keep secrets. I told you that.
All right, no need to sound pissy. I had to ask. And we'll talk about it, but not tonight. Tonight, I don't feel capable of talking about anything.
It can wait. But about the TV tubes, how do you get them if you don't have any internet? He rolled his eyes.
Did you think that mailbox is out there just for decoration? Something to hang holly on at Christmas, perhaps?
He was talking about snail mail. It came as a revelation to me that people still used it to do business. I thought about asking him why he didn't just buy a new TV set, but I thought I knew the answer. He liked old things. As the hands on the living room clock crawled toward 6, I realized I wanted to give him the pills almost as much as he wanted to take them. Finally, the time came. I went upstairs, got 2, and gave them to him with a glass of water. He almost snatched them out of my hand. The room was cool, but his forehead was beaded with sweat. "I'll give Radar her chow," I said.
"Then take her out in the backyard. She's quick about doing the necessary, but stay outside for a bit. Hand me that urinal, Charlie. I don't want you to see me using this goddamn thing. And at my age, it takes a while to get going."
2. By the time I came back and emptied the urinal, the pills were doing their work. He asked for the chicken soup, Jewish penicillin, he called it. He drank the broth and ate the noodles with a spoon. When I came back from rinsing the mug, he'd gone to sleep. It didn't surprise me. He'd put in a hell of a day. I went upstairs to his room, found his copy of The Bride Wore Black, and was deep into it when he woke up at 8 o'clock.
"Why don't you turn on the TV and see if you can find that singing show?"
he asked.
"Radar and I like to watch that sometimes."
I turned on the television, flipped through the very few available channels, and found The Voice, barely visible through a blizzard of snow. I adjusted the rabbit ears until the picture was as clear as it was going to get, and we watched a number of contestants do their thing. Most of them were pretty damn good. I turned to Mr. Bowditch to tell him I liked the country guy, and he was fast asleep. 3. I left the bell beside him on his little table and went upstairs. I looked back once and saw Radar sitting at the foot. When she saw me looking down, she turned and went back to Mr. Bowditch, where she spent that night and every night. He slept on that rollout couch even after he was able to use the stairs again, because by then they were hard for her. My room was okay, although the single standing lamp cast spooky shadows on the ceiling, and the house creaked in its joints, as I'd pretty much known it would. I guessed that when the wind blew, it would be a regular symphony. I plugged in my Nighthawk and went to the net. I was thinking about carrying that weight of gold on my back, and how it made me remember my mother reading me an old story from a little golden book. I told myself I was just passing the time, but now I wonder. I think sometimes we know where we're going, even when we think we don't. I found at least 7 different versions of Jack and the Beanstalk, reading them on my phone by the light of that single lamp. I reminded myself to bring my laptop the next day, but for tonight the phone would have to do. I knew the story, of course. Like Goldilocks and Red Riding Hood, it's part of the cultural river that carries kids downstream. I think I saw the animated cartoon version at some point after Mom read me the story, but can't remember for sure. The original story, courtesy of Wikipedia, was a lot more bloodthirsty than the one I remembered. For one thing, Jack is living with just his mother because the giant has killed his father during one of the giant's many rampages. You probably know the story too. Jack and his mom are broke. All they have is a cow. Mom tells Jack to take it to market and sell it and get at least 5 gold coins for it. No pellets in this story. On the way to town, Jack meets a fast-talking peddler who persuades him to trade the cow for 5 magic beans. His mother is furious and throws the beans out the window. Overnight, they sprout a magic beanstalk that goes high into the clouds. Up there is a huge castle. How it floats on clouds is something none of the versions go into, where the giant lives with his wife. Jack basically steals golden stuff, coins, a goose that lays golden eggs, the golden harp that warns the giant. But it's not stealing in the usual sense, because the giant has stolen all the golden stuff for himself. I found out that the giant's famous chant, "Fee-fi-fo-fum, I smell the blood of an Englishman," was cribbed from King Lear, where a character named Edgar says, "Child Roland to the dark tower came, his word was still fie-fo-and-fum, I smell the blood of a British man." And something else I don't remember from any animated cartoon or little golden book, the giant's sleeping chamber is littered with the bones of children. The giant's name gave me a chill, deep and premonitory. Gog Magog. 4. I turned off the standing lamp at 11 and dozed until my phone's alarm woke me at 11:45. I hadn't bothered to put the oxy pills in the safe yet. They were on the bureau where I'd stashed my few clothes. I took 2 of them downstairs. Radar growled at me in the dark and sat up.
"Hush, girl,"
Mr. Bowditch said, and she did. I turned on the lamp. He was lying on his back, staring up at the ceiling.
"Well, here you are, right on the dot. Good. I really didn't want to ring that bell."
"Have you slept?"
"Some. After I get these damn things down my gullet, I might be able to get under again, maybe until dawn."
I gave him the pills. He got up on one elbow to swallow them, then handed me the glass and lay back down.
"Better already. That's the psychological effect, I suppose."
"Can I get you anything else?"
"No, go back to bed. Growing boys need their rest."
"I think I've done most of my growing. At least I hoped so. I was 6'4 and weighed 220. If I grew any more, I'd be a Gog Magog." I said it without thinking. I expected a laugh, but didn't even get a smile.
"Been studying up on your fairy tales?"
I shrugged. Carrying the gold to Stantonville made me think of the magic beans and the beanstalk.
"So now you know Jack."
"I guess I do."
"In the Bible, Gog and Magog are the warring nations of the world. Did you know that?"
"No."
Book of Revelations. Put them together and you'd have a real monster. One best to steer clear of. Turn out the light, Charlie. We both need some sleep. You'll get yours. I may get mine. A little vacation from the pain would be nice.
I gave Radar a pat, then turned off the light. I headed for the stairs, then turned back. Mr. Bowditch.
Howard,
he said.
You need to practice that. You're not the fucking butler.
I thought I sort of was, but didn't want to argue the point so late at night. Howard, right. What did you do for a living before you retired? He chuckled. It was a rusty sound, but not unpleasant.
I was a part-time surveyor and a part-time logger. Simple woodcutter, in other words. The fairy tales are full of them. Go to bed, Charlie.
I went to bed and slept until 6, when it was time for more pills. Not just the painkillers this time, but the whole works. Once more, I found him awake and looking up at the ceiling. I asked him if he'd slept. He said yes. I'm not sure I believed him. 5. We had eggs for breakfast, scrambled by moi. Mr. Bowditch sat on the edge of the rollout couch to eat, with his fixator-encased leg on the hassock that went with his easy chair. He asked me again to leave while he used the urinal. When I came back, he was actually up and on his crutches, looking out the front window. You should have waited for me to help you, I said. He made a chuh sound.
You straightened that picket fence.
Radar helped.
I bet she did. It looks better. Help me back to bed, Charlie. You'll have to hold my leg, like you did before.
I got him into bed. I took Radar for a walk along Pine Street, and the newer, fresher med seemed to be helping because she walked quite a distance, marking telephone poles and a hydrant or two along the way. Radar of Bowditch. Later on, I took Mr. Bowditch's check to the bank. At home, Dad long gone by then, I grabbed some more clothes and my laptop. Lunch was more S&S for Mr. Bowditch and hot dogs for me. A frozen dinner would have gone down well. I liked the Stouffer's, but Mr. Bowditch didn't have a microwave. I put some of the meat from Tiller & Sons out to thaw. I could see YouTube cooking videos in my future if we weren't going to be living on canned soup and sardines. I gave Mr. Bowditch his noon pills. I called Melissa Wilcox to check in, as she'd asked me to do. I was supposed to tell her how many times Mr. Bowditch had been up, what he was eating, and if he'd had a bowel movement. That last was a big no, and she wasn't surprised. She said OxyContin was a hell of a constipator. After lunch, I took an envelope out to his mailbox and raised the flag. It contained his personal check made out to Arcadia Hospital. I could have taken it myself, but Mr. Bowditch wanted to be sure Heinrich's check cleared first. I tell you these things not because they are particularly interesting, but because they established a routine, one that continued through the rest of that spring and most of the summer. In some ways, those were good months. I felt useful, needed. I liked myself better than I had in a long time. Only the end was terrible. 6. On the Wednesday afternoon of my spring vacation week, Melissa arrived for Mr. Bowditch's first PT session. She called it physical therapy. He called it pain and torture. He got an extra oxy, which he liked, and a lot of stretching and lifting of the bad leg, which he didn't. I was in the kitchen during most of it. Among other bon mots, I heard,
"Cocksucker! Fuckstick! Motherfucker!"
and
"Stop!"
He said stop a lot, sometimes adding, "God damn you." Melissa wasn't fazed. When it was over, 20 minutes, that probably seemed a lot longer to him, she called me in. I'd brought down a couple of extra chairs from the third floor, not the straight-backed ones that went with the dining room table, which looked to me like implements of torture. Mr. Bowditch was sitting in one of them. Melissa had brought along a big foam cushion, and the ankle of his bad leg was resting on it. Because the cushion was lower than the hassock, his knee, still bandaged, was slightly bent.
"Look at that," Melissa cried. 5 degrees of bend already. I'm not just pleased, I'm amazed.
"Hurts like fucking hell,"
Mr. Bowditch grumbled.
"Ugh, I want to go back to bed."
She laughed merrily, as if that was the funniest thing she'd ever heard. 5 more minutes, then up on your crutches. Charlie'll help. He made the 5 minutes, then struggled up and got his crutches braced. He turned toward the bed, but lost one of them. It clattered to the floor, and Radar barked. I caught him in time and helped him finish the turn. For the few moments we were locked together, me with my arm around him and his around me, I could feel his heart beating hard and fast. Fierce was the word that came into my mind. I got him onto the bed, but in the process his bad leg bent a lot more than 5 degrees and he screamed with pain. Radar was up at once, barking with her ears laid back.
I'm okay, girl,
Mr. Bowditch said. He was out of breath.
Get down.
She went to her belly, her eyes never leaving him. Melissa gave him a glass of water. As a special treat for good work, you can have your evening pain pills at 5 tonight. I'll be back on Friday. I know this hurts, Howard. Those ligaments don't want to stretch, but they will, if you stick with it.
Christ,
he said. Then, grudgingly,
okay.
Charlie, walk me out. I did, carrying her bulky duffel bag of equipment. Her little Honda Civic was parked outside the gate. As I raised the hatchback and put the duffel in, I saw Mrs. Richland across the street, once again shading her eyes to get a better view of the festivities. She saw me looking and twiddled her fingers. Will he really get better? I asked.
Yes. Did you see the bend in his knee? That's extraordinary. I've seen it before, but usually in younger patients.
She considered, then nodded.
He'll get better. At least for a while.
What does that mean? She opened the driver's door.
Grumpy old cuss, isn't he?
He doesn't exactly have people skills, I said, perfectly aware she hadn't answered my question. She gave that cheery laugh again. I loved how pretty she was in the spring sunshine.
You can say that again, Haas. Put it in lights. I'll be back Friday. Different day, same routine.
What's Lynparza? I know the other ones he takes, but not that one. What's it do? Her smile faded.
I can't tell you that, Charlie. Patient confidentiality.
She slid behind the wheel.
But you could look it up on the internet. Everything's on the net.
She drove away. 7. At 7 o'clock that night, my father opened the front gate, which I hadn't bothered to bolt, and came up the walk to where I was sitting on the porch steps. After Mr. Bowditch's round of PT, I'd asked him if he'd like to put off his visit with my dad. I almost wished he'd say yes, but after a moment's consideration, he'd shaken his head.
Let's do this. Set his mind at rest. He probably wants to make sure that I'm not a child molester.
I said nothing to that, although in his current condition, Mr. Bowditch wouldn't be able to molest a Cub Scout, let alone a 6'4 galoot who had lettered in 2 sports. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Dad.
I gave him a hug. He was carrying a 6-pack of Coke.
Think you'd have any use for this stuff? I broke my leg when I was 12 and couldn't swill enough of it.
Come on in and ask him. Mr. Bowditch was sitting in one of the chairs I'd brought down. He'd asked me to bring him a button-up shirt and a comb for his hair. Except for the PJ bottoms bulking over the fixator, I thought he looked pretty squared away. I was nervous, hoping he wouldn't be too grouchy with my dad, but I needn't have worried. His meds were kicking in, but it wasn't just that. The man actually had social skills. Rusty, but there. I guess some things are like riding a bike.
Mr. Reed, he said. I've seen you back in the old days, but it's good to meet you officially.
He held out one of his big, veiny hands.
Pardon me if I don't stand.
Dad shook with him.
No problem. And please, call me George.
I will. And I'm Howard. Although I've had a hell of a time convincing your son of that, I want to tell you how good he's been to me. A Boy Scout without the bullshit, if you don't mind me saying.
Not at all, Dad said. I'm proud of him. How are you doing?
Mending. At least that's what the torture queen tells me.
Physical therapy?
So they call it.
And here's a good girl, Dad said, bending down to Radar and giving her big strokes. She and I have met.
I've heard. Unless my eyes deceive me, that looks like Coca-Cola.
They don't. Want some over ice? I'm afraid they're warm.
Coke on ice would be welcome. There was a time when a belt of rum in there would have added some extra zing.
I tensed a little, but Dad just laughed.
I hear you.
Charlie, want to grab three of those tall glasses off the top shelf and fill them with ice?
Sure.
You might want to rinse them first. They haven't been used for a while.
I took my time, listening to the conversation as I rinsed the glasses and cracked the ice out of Mr. Bowditch's old-fashioned tray. Mr. Bowditch offered Dad condolences on the loss of his wife, said he'd had a few conversations with her on Sycamore Street.
When I used to get out more.
And she seemed like a lovely woman.
That goddamn bridge should have been paved over right away,
Mr. Bowditch said.
Her death could have been avoided. I'm surprised you didn't sue the city.
He was too busy drinking to think of things like that, I thought. My old resentments were mostly gone, but not entirely. Fright and loss leave a residue. 8. It was dark when I walked with Dad back down the path to the gate. Mr. Bowditch was in bed, having made the transfer with only a little help from me while Dad watched.
He's not what I expected, Dad said when we reached the sidewalk. Not at all. I expected grumpy, maybe even surly.
He can be that way. With you, he was kind of, I don't know what to call it. My father did.
He extended himself. He wanted me to like him because he likes you. I see the way he looks at you, kiddo. You mean a lot to him. Don't let him down. As long as he doesn't fall down.
Dad hugged me and kissed my cheek and walked back down the hill. I watched him appear in each pool of streetlight, then disappear again. Sometimes I did still resent him for his lost years, because they were my lost years too. Mostly, I was just glad he was back.
That went all right, didn't it?
Mr. Bowditch asked when I went back inside. It went fine.
And what shall we do with our evening, Charlie?
I had an idea about that. Wait one. I'd downloaded 2 episodes of The Voice to my laptop. I set it on the table beside his bed where we both could see it.
Holy jumping Jesus, look at that picture,
he exclaimed. I know, not bad, right? And no commercials. We watched the first one. I was up for 2, but he fell asleep 5 minutes in. I took my laptop upstairs and read about Lynn Parza. 9. On Friday, I carried Melissa's equipment duffel out to her Civic again. I closed the hatchback and turned to her. I looked up Lynn Parza.
Thought you would.
It treats 4 things. I know he's not taking it for breast cancer or ovarian cancer, so which is it? Prostate or the other one? I hope to God it wasn't pancreatic. My dad's dad had it and died less than 6 months after the diagnosis.
Patient confidentiality, Charlie, I can't say.
But her face was telling me something else.
Come on, Melissa, you're not a doctor, and someone told you. Because I have to work with him. To do that, I need to know the overall picture. I can keep a secret. You know that already, right?
Meaning the high-power painkillers that I wasn't actually old enough to dispense. She sighed.
It's prostate cancer. Abrams, the orthopedist who worked on him, saw it on the x-rays. Well advanced, but not metastasized. Lynparza slows the growth of tumors. Sometimes actually reverses it.
Shouldn't he be on more drugs, like chemo or radiation treatments?
Mrs. Richland was out again. She twiddled and we twiddled back. Melissa hesitated, then must have decided that, having gone this far, there was no point in stopping.
He saw Dr. Patterson, who's head of the oncology department at Arcadia.
He laid out the options, and Bowditch refused all of them except the Lynparza.
Why?
You'd have to ask him that, Charlie. But if you do, don't tell him about this conversation. I probably wouldn't lose my job, but technically I could. And listen, there are doctors, plenty of them, who'd say he made the right call. Prostate cancer slows down in old men. With the Lynparza, he might have years.
10.
That night, we watched another episode of The Voice. When it was over, Mr. Bowditch struggled up on his crutches.
Oh, this could be a big night, Charlie. I think I'm actually going to take a shit.
The fireworks are ready, I said.
Save it for your stand-up routine.
When I tried to follow him to the kitchen, he turned his head and snapped.
Go back and watch your gadget, for God's sake. If I fall down, you can pick me up.
I went back. I heard the door to the little bathroom close. 5 minutes passed, then 10. I tossed Radar her monkey until she wouldn't chase it anymore and curled up on her rug. At last, I went to the kitchen doorway and asked if he was okay.
Fine,
he called back.
But I could use a stick of dynamite. Fucking Oxycontin.
The toilet finally flushed, and when he came out, he was sweaty but smiling.
The eagle has landed, thank Christ.
I helped him back into bed and decided to take advantage of his good mood. I showed him the bottle of Lynparza. I read up on this stuff, and you could be doing a lot more.
Oh, is that so, Dr. Reed?
But there was a faint smile at the corners of his mouth, and that gave me enough courage to go on. Doctors have got a lot of weapons against cancer now. I just don't know why you wouldn't use them.
It's quite simple. You know I'm in pain. You know I can't sleep without those goddamn constipating pills. You've heard me scream at Melissa, who's a very nice woman, and so far I've managed to avoid calling her a cunt or a bitch, but those unpleasant words could pop out at any time. Why would I want to add nausea, vomiting, and cramps to the pain I'm already suffering?
I started to reply, but he got up on one elbow and made a shushing sound.
There's something else, young man. Something a person your age can't understand. I've almost had enough. Not quite, but almost. Life gets old. You might not believe that. I know I didn't when I...
He paused.
When I was young. But it's true.
He lay back, groped for Radar, found her, stroked her.
But I didn't want to leave her alone. Right? We're pals, she and I. And now I don't have to worry. If she outlives me, you'd take her. Wouldn't you?
Yes, of course.
As for the therapy,
his smile broadened.
Today, I got 10 degrees of bend. And I've started using that rubber band thing to flex my ankle. I'm going to work hard. Because I don't want to die in bed. Especially not on this fucking rollout couch.
11. We hadn't discussed the source of the gold, that was the elephant in the room, but on Sunday I realized there was something we had to discuss. I could still give him his morning and evening pills, but what was he going to do about the midday ones once I went back to school? I guess Melissa could give them to you on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday when she comes in for PT, but they really wouldn't have much time to work before you start exercising. And what about Tuesdays and Thursdays?
I'll just ask Mrs. Richland in to give them to me. She could look the place over while she's here. Maybe take some pictures and put them on her Facebook or Twitter.
Very funny.
It's not just the midday pills,
he said.
There's the ones at midnight.
Well, I'll be here to...
No, Charlie. It's time you went back home. I'm sure your father misses you.
I'm just up the street from him.
Yes, and your bedroom is empty. There's just one person at the supper table when he comes home. Men on their own can sometimes start thinking bad thoughts. I know all about that, believe me. You will leave my noon pills with me when you come in the morning to check on me and feed Radar, and you will leave my midnight pills when you go home at night.
I'm not supposed to do that. He nodded.
In case I cheat. Which would be a temptation because I'm addicted to the goddamn things. But I give you my word.
He got up on both elbows and fixed me with his eyes.
The first time I cheat, I'll tell you and give the pills up entirely. Switch to Tylenol. That's my promise, and I'll keep it. Can you live with that?
I thought it over and said I could. He put out his hand. We shook. That night I showed him how to access the films and TV shows stored on my laptop. I put 2 20-milligram oxy pills in a little dish on the table beside his bed. I shouldered my backpack and held up my phone. If you need me, call, day or night.
Day or night,
he agreed. Radar followed me to the door. I bent, stroked her, gave her a hug. She licked my cheek. Then I went home. 12. He never cheated. Not once.